whomever Allah guides, no one can misguide, and whomever Allah misleads, no one can guide. O Allah, don't make what my pen has written rejected from you, and don't make what I authored a witness against me on the Day of Judgment. And O Allah, I ask you to grant me a shahada that would raise my ranks in paradise. May your peace and blessings be on Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. 2 years after he penned these words down, he dies as a shaheed. Ibn Nahas talks about the fact that we are Muslim because of the Sahaba radiallahu anhum, because of their fight, because they gave us Islam by spilling their blood. So he says we need to be grateful for that. I think it's very ungrateful for some Muslims today to say that the Sahaba did not fight and then they went out and gave da'wah to the people peacefully. If the Sahaba did da'wah in this fashion, the fashion that these people are doing, the same way, we wouldn't have been Muslim today. If it wasn't that the Sahaba killed our forefathers and made their children Muslim, we wouldn't have been Muslim today. We would have been worshipping idols and animals. But because of the Sahaba entered into our lands and killed our forefathers and invaded the land and taken up their property, that is how Islam became the religion of the next generation. But if the Sahaba came in peacefully and just started distributing the leaflets and standing on corners and giving the people da'wah, nobody would have bought their message. And we would have been now, one generation after another, going into hellfire. I would rather have a Sahabi come to me and take me as a slave and have me wash their feet and take up my property and me becoming Muslim than having me a free man that would end up going to hellfire. And what the Sahaba did was nothing. If they would take away the property of people, take away their women and children and make them slaves, that's nothing compared to the blessing that they gave the people of saving them from hellfire, dragging them to Jannah in chains. So we need to be grateful to what the Sahaba did. They did this through their swords. And that's the only way we can save the people of the world. Shaitan is deceiving them. The media is deceiving them. A'immat al-kufr are deceiving them. And the only way you could break that deception is to fight shaitan by the sword. Because shaitan is not going to give in peacefully. So we ask Allah Azza wa Jal to guide us to this path, to make us of those who will bring others into the religion. نسأل الله عز وجل أن يجعلنا هاديين مهديين وأن يهدي بنا. نسأل الله عز وجل أن يجعلنا من المجاهدين في سبيله بأموالهم وأنفسهم. ونسأل الله عز وجل أن يرزقنا أجمعين الشهادة. Just as Ibn Nahas wrote this book and asked in the end that Allah takes him as a shaheed, we have finished studying his book and we would do exactly what he did by finishing this book. We ask Allah عز وجل to take us all as shuhada. We ask Allah عز وجل to grant us that blessing, to give us that favor of being among the ones whom Allah, His messengers and His angels will witness for them. And make them shuhada. ربنا آتنا في الدنيا حسنة وفي الآخرة حسنة وقنا عذاب النار وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم نسألك اللهم أن تتقبل منا هذا الدرس يا أرحم الراحمين نسألك يا أرحم الراحمين أن تتقبل منا يا ذا الجمال والكمال والإكرام اللهم اجعلنا ممن يستمعون القول فيتبعون أحسنه اللهم اجعلنا ممن يستمعون القول ويتبعون أحسنه اللهم اجعلنا ممن يستمعون القول فيتبعون أحسنه يا ذا الجمال والكمال والإكرام نسألك أن تجعلنا من المجاهدين في سبيل الله بأموالهم وأنفسهم اللهم إنا نسألك أن ترزقنا الشهادة صابرين محتسبين مقبلين غير مدبرين ثابتين وأفرغ علينا صبرا وثبت أقدامنا وانصرنا على القوم الكافرين ربنا آتنا في الدنيا حسنة وفي الآخرة حسنة وقنا ووالدينا عذاب القبر والنار يا عزيز يا غفار وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم تسليما كثيرا briefly, we'll go through questions, yeah, inshallah ta'ala.
Can I ask a quick question? How many chapters were there for the Saraya, attacking the Saraya?
Many of them were, well, you had some Saraya, especially in the early years, were to establish a reputation for the Muslims. So Rasulullah ﷺ would send out these raids so that everybody would know that this is a strong Islamic state and it's serious. Number two, Ghanaim. To strengthen the Muslim treasury in order to finance al-jihad fi sabilillah. So Rasulullah ﷺ was looking after caravans. You had number three, these special operation groups, assassination missions, or the subjection of some tribes that were antagonizing the Muslims. Number five, reconnaissance. Many of them were reconnaissance missions.
Questions I've made. First one is, I'm sure you mentioned it earlier, but I can't remember, the characteristics of those who are steadfast to the truth. You mentioned the prophets, and then you mentioned that group, and then you mentioned the Jacobin, the excellent company. What were the characteristics of those
group? I don't... were you talking about the... You have Al-Anbiya and then As-Siddiqeen, and then Al-Shuhada and then As-Salihin. So you want to know the Siddiqeen. What's the characteristics of Siddiqeen? Siddiqeen are the ones who are not misled by Shahawat or Shubuhat. Shahawat are desires and Shubuhat are doubts. Siddiq reaches to a level of believing in the truth where no doubt can enter into their hearts and no lust or desire can deceive them. That's a Siddiqiyah. Yes?
Second question. So when you made Talk on Ka'bah, and Quraysh referring to him, and then he said, Quraysh, I bring you slaughter.
Yes.
What does he mean by that? Because he really did not slaughter the Quraysh. He slaughtered the Yahud, but not the...
Yeah, what it means by that is that Qital. Qital fi sabillah. He will be fought. And their leadership, who were present then, were killed in the Battle of Badr. Everyone who was there was killed in the Battle of Badr. Yes. Yes.
Many of the battles, the Muslim women and Muslim men would interact. Like, for example, the women would nurse the men, they'd provide water, they'd even drink their bodies. So with regards to this type of interaction, what's like the procedures for conflict boundaries for the men?
The interaction between men and women in the time of Rasulullah ﷺ was more than what we define as acceptable today. Meaning we have placed restrictions on the interaction that didn't exist in the time of Rasulullah ﷺ. For example, in the masajid, the men and women would pray together. Women would be behind the men without a curtain or a screen. Women would serve men in invitations. They would be in hijab and they would serve men. And women continued to play a role on the battlefield, even later on, in the time of Al-Khulafa. So you have Nusayb ibn Ka'b fighting in the army of Khalid bin Walid against Musaylim al-Kadhab. She actually participated in the fighting itself. And they nursed the injured. And they served the army. So there was a level of interaction there. There was a level of interaction there which is more than what we have today or what we see as acceptable today. Okay. Do we have time for that? Yes. Or should I do it tomorrow?
Yeah. We'll make time for that. We'll make time for that. Okay. We'll go to sleep 1 hour late. We'll have busy.
I did very fastest jot a few notes, but I intended on doing more detailed research. I apologize, I didn't have the time to, but I'll go through what I have now. First of all, relating to that issue of the ghanaim in Dar al-Harb, we have to talk about the concept of ghanima and the concept of Dar al-Harb. Al-ghanima. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam says, جُعِلَ رِزْقِي تَحْتَ ظِلْ رُمْحِ. My rizq comes from under the shade of my spear. And Allah Azza wa Jalla has called al-ghanima halalan tayyiba. It's halal and pure. So how come ghanima is considered to be halal and pure? So Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam says, جُعِلَ رِزْقِي تَحْتَ ظِلْ رُمْحِ. Now, why is ghanima considered to be a high on the list of halal rizq? The reason is, or that's what the scholars say, is that when somebody is working from 9 to 5, let's say 5 days a week, that is time taken away from your da'wah and from your jihad and from serving Allah Azza wa Jal. You're doing it to get rizq. Everybody says, I mean, I'm doing it for the sake of Allah, to serve the ummah and all that. But let me ask you this question. If it's really for the sake of all of these lofty reasons, would you still do it if you're not paid? So the issue here is money. You're doing that rizq to make money. Let's be straightforward and honest about it. You're working because you want that money. You want to lay some food on the table. If it was really for the service of religion, that you would be willing to do it for free, which I doubt anybody would be willing to work from 9 to 5, 5 days a week for free. So the objective is clear. It's for money. The mujahid is devoting his time 24/7 for the sake of Allah Azza wa Jal. He's not separating any time for seeking rizq. Ghanima comes not as an objective, but as a consequence of jihad. A mujahid who's fighting fi sabilillah is doing it fi sabilillah. Ghanima comes on the side, comes along. So the ghanima is a consequence rather than being an objective. While when you work, money is the objective, not a consequence. So you see the difference between the two. So the mujahid has given his life, his time, his effort for the sake of Allah, and Allah Azza wa Jal has rewarded him ghanima. Therefore the mujahid is better than everybody else, and the rizq that he makes is better than any other rizq. And the sahaba radiallahu anhum used to look down at other lines of work, and they would consider that their role is dua to the world. So Umar ibn Khattab radiallahu anhu, he heard that some Sahaba started opening up farms in Al-Urdan. They went into Urdan and they heard that the land over there is very blessed and the returns are great. So the Sahaba, they started getting themselves busy with farming. Umar ibn Khattab sends them a letter. He said, first of all, he burns all of those farms. Just burns them down. And he waited until they were almost going to harvest. Alright? He burnt it down. And then he sent him a letter. He said, if you are to open farms and to raise cattle, then you become equal to everybody else. Allah Azza wa Jalla has sent you with jihad and da'wah. In another narration, or it might be a different occasion, Umar ibn Khattab said, whoever raises cattle and starts farming and accepts that as a line of work, then I'm going to force him to pay jizya. Because that is the job of Ahl al-Kitab. That is the work of Ahl al-Kitab. Your work is jihad fi sabilillah. One of the Salaf, they told him, why don't you get yourself a farm for your kids? He said, Allah did not send me as a farmer, but he sent me to kill the farmer and take away his crops. So you see that the understanding of the Sahaba had is that our role is to convey the message of Allah Azza wa Jal. And let these roles of shepherding and business and farming, let the other people do it. We're going to live off the ghanima. And we're going to guide humanity to Islam. People say that Rasulullah ﷺ was a businessman. He was a businessman before Islam. Rasulullah ﷺ, after he started jihad, he didn't really work in any particular profession. He wasn't a businessman after that. Rasulullah ﷺ would live from al-khumus that he would get from al-fayt. And why is al-fayt called fayt? Why is fayt called fayt? Fayt means return. And the reason why it's called return is because it returns to the lawful owners. And that's the second reason why ghanima is made halal, is because Allah Azza wa Jal has created wealth so that people can establish salah and zakah and Islam. Allah Azza wa Jal says, وَلَا تُؤْتُوا السُّفَهَاءَ أَمْوَالَكُمْ الَّتِي جَعَلَ اللَّهُ لَكُمْ قِيَامًا. Don't give the sufaha, the ones with weak minds, your wealth, because Allah has made wealth قِيَامًا لِلنَّاسِ. Qiyam means it sustains life. Your life depends on money. Your existence in this world depends on wealth. So Allah has brought down wealth so that the mu'min can establish the ibadah of Allah Azza wa Jal. So when wealth is in the hands of the kafir, and what does kafir mean? One who rejects Allah Azza wa Jal. When the wealth is in the hands of the kafir, it is in the hands of somebody who doesn't deserve it. So when the mujahid takes it away from the kafir and puts it in the hands of the mu'min, that is a great blessing because, and that makes it halal because it is taking the wealth from the hands of the ones who don't deserve it and putting it in the hands of the ones who deserve it. So that's why ghanima is made halal. It belongs to Allah Azza wa Jalla and it's going back to the right hands. So al-fayt is wealth coming back to its rightful owners. So that's the concept of ghanima itself. Because sometimes people have this doubt in their mind. How could the Sahaba live off the money of some other people? They worked for it, their lives, and then the Sahaba come and take it. The issue is here that the Sahaba radiallahu anhum are appointed by Allah Azza wa Jal to spread the religion. The wealth belongs to Allah Azza wa Jal, and Allah Azza wa Jal wants to give them this wealth so that they can carry on fi jihad fi sabilillah and giving da'wah. And these people whom the Sahaba brought Islam to need to pay for that. So that's the concept of ghanima itself, so that you understand how come ghanima is such a great blessing of Allah Azza wa Jal, and how come it's the purest form of rizq. When Abdul Rahman ibn Auf passed away, he said that you should give part of my wealth to everybody who attended the Battle of Badr. So they brought to Uthman ibn Affan some money and they said, this is from Uthman. Uthman ibn Affan, they said it's from Abdul Rahman. Uthman ibn Affan at the time was the Khalifa. And he was a businessman, he was wealthy. But he accepted the money of Abdul Rahman ibn Auf because he said, it is 100% halal. Coming from ghanaim, it's coming from a ghanaim that he invests. The second issue, taking ghanima from Dar al-Harb and whether these areas would be classified as Dar al-Harb. I think that for us, the issue should be beyond having second thoughts on whether this is Dar al-Harb or not. I don't think it's even time for us to discuss the evidences for that. It's an issue that is beyond discussion. It should be cleared and it should be common knowledge, and the straw that broke the camel back is Iraq, but that's just a straw. So from a fiqh point of view there is no issue here with the legality of taking ghanam from strictly Sharia point of view. However, there's some that statement needs to be studied from a fiqh al-waqa' point of view and a strategic point of view. You have two concerns. Number one, money and arf, al-mal wal-arf, and al-dam. These three issues, blood, wealth, and arf, woman. Because there is room for corruption in these three areas, Islam has placed restrictions so that these three areas are not handled on an individual basis, but they are handled on a collective basis. So only a jama'ah can take a decision in these areas. when it comes to the dima, the blood of people, when it comes to the wealth of people, and when it comes to al-araf, women, it must be done in a collective way through the permission of an amir and a shura. It is not an issue that is taken into individual hands. And this is very clear from a sharia point of view, the role that is given to the Amir Iqamat al-Had, and these issues are given to the Amara. Why? Because there's room for a lot of corruption in these areas. If these areas are opened for people to take matters in their own hands, there will be fasad fil-af. There will be corruption on land. And it would lead to a chaotic stage. So, when it comes to these issues, the decision is made through a jama'ah and an amir. The second concern, the reputation of Muslims is a valid concern. The reputation of Muslims is a valid concern. It is not good for the Muslims to have a reputation of being burglars, of being rapists. And Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam did take such matters in consideration when Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam was told by Umar bin Khattab to kill Abdullah bin Umayr, who was the head of al-Munafiqeen, and he deserved to be executed. What did Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam say? He said, "La uridu an yaqul an yatahaddath an-nas anna Muhammadan yaqtulu ashabah." I don't want people to go around saying that Muhammad is killing his followers. So he didn't disagree with the fact that he deserves to die, but he said that it's not good for the reputation of Muslims. That's the only reason I'm not going to kill him. Because I don't want people to say that Muhammad is killing his followers. That will turn people away from Islam. They're going to say we're not going to follow a man who will end up killing us. So Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam withheld that decision and did not execute Abdullah ibn Ubay, who has caused so much fitna, and so much disunity, and so much fasad in the Muslim community. Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam had patience in that regard. So the reputation is important. If the Muslims still have a good reputation in such areas, they should be careful. If the reputation is already tarnished and gone, then that is not a concern anymore. The third concern regarding this issue is, in my view, and I've heard the two other opinions that I heard are contrary to this. All of such money needs to be dealt with as fay' and not ghanimah. It should be dealt as if it is fay' and not ghanimah. Therefore, none of it goes to the individual. The entire amount goes to the jama'ah. And that's also a safety valve to make sure that people are not going to start doing things for their own personal gain and benefit. And that is fasad. And also from a fiqh point of view, it looks like fay'. There is no fighting involved, so how can it be ghanima? How can a person take for a fifth of it, or half, or whatever, if there is no fighting involved? So it should be dealt with as fay' and not ghanima. And when it is fay', all of it goes to the jama'ah. And then it's up to the discretion of the amir to give the concerned individuals part of it as a pay for their effort, if they have gone through some risk. Because there could be some risk and they could end up paying a hefty price for it. So they need to be compensated for that. But this is up to the discretion of the Amir. If the Amir doesn't want to give anything, then he doesn't have to. Now I don't know on what basis these other du'a have said that it's ghanima. But Allah alam du'a said that it is fate. The issue of women. Slavery is a practice that has been abolished around the world. So, is it a practice that the Muslims should reintroduce again? To answer this question, we need to look at if slavery was something instituted by the Muslim armies because it is something that the enemy used to do. So it's ta'amul bil-mith, treating them in the same way. Or whether it was an institution that was accepted in its essence and made halal by Allah Azza wa Jalla independently of what the enemy does. And there's two views regarding that. There's one view that states that no, it was only allowed because If the Muslims did not allow it, it would put them at a great disadvantage compared to the enemy. The enemy is taking away your people as slaves, and you're freeing them. So that puts the Muslims at a disadvantage. Therefore, they were allowed to do what the enemy was doing. Slavery was an international thing in those days. The other view is that no, there's something that is independently allowed in Islam, regardless of what the enemy would do. Therefore, if the Muslims want to do it again, they can. However, this is something that is not promoted or recommended. It is something up to, again, the Amir of the Jama'ah to do. But in this case, I would say that it's not an Amir of a Jama'ah that does not have law enforcement authority. Because slavery is an institution that needs to be backed by law enforcement. And that ability does not exist with Jama'at living in non-Muslim environment. Jama'at living in non-Muslim environment can take decisions regarding money only if they can guarantee that there will be that they have at least the ability to discipline the members and to enforce among the members the decisions, and they have the loyalty of the members to ensure that. Otherwise, again, that would open up a door of fasad that will only have bad consequences on the ummah, and it's not worth the money that you're going to get. And to have disputes among the Muslims on financial issues, and to have the reputation of the Muslims destroyed and tarnished because of that, it's not worth it for the petty cash that you could get. So unless, yani, with the issue of women, I don't see that is allowed at all with Jama'at today, unless they are in a position of they have law enforcement ability, which means they rule. When it comes to money, there needs to be strong loyalty among the Jama'ah, and it needs to be very much restricted and securely dealt with. And with the issue of dima, the same thing would also apply. Wallahu a'lam. Again, these are thoughts scattered here and there, not in a very organized way. But more research needs to be done on this area because of its a very critical issue.